Beloved people of God, last week I was challenged by a member concerning how I preached last week's text, and rightfully so. He wanted me to see and look at the particular points in which were put here. Look at the context as we see these words concerning the temple. That this is about the temple destruction. He is speaking to the disciples. These are words for them in that day. They have a certain limited scope in the way that Jesus is speaking here. We just only have to look at Jesus responding to the question about the temple. We have to look at those words, for in those days the time of tribulation will be such as has not occurred since the beginning of creation, which God has created until now and never will. We need to see those words. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. And the words you are to his disciples. And so, I skipped over a step in my work last week, where I applied this directly to us without first thinking about and considering what this has to do with his disciples. And this can help us. But we also need to recognize that this is a prophecy. And so I think we even need to take another step back and consider how prophecy can be understood. As we look at the way we interpret and understand prophecy. I appreciate what William Hendrickson says as he talks about this passage. And he says it is extremely complicated. It's hard to untangle what is for them specifically and whether there's stuff for us in the future. And none of the commentators I read agree. But all of them say that there relates both to the disciples then, but also to us. That there are future elements here that we should see. Some say that starts at verse 35 and everything else is for before. Some would break it up in certain sections. But when one sees prophecy, they can see it as one who is looking at a landscape, and looking back from afar at an entire landscape, as Hendrickson says, that sees two mountain peaks. And one can describe that as one scene. Yet, when you approach and get closer to the mountain, one can see that those two peaks are actually further apart than one seems. We can also see that when prophecies are made, there can be partial fulfillments at that time. Yet it still pointed to a greater fulfillment. We think of the prophecy in Haggai, where God prophesied about a greater temple, where all the treasures would be brought to it. In some way, the Herod's temple that was built, all these treasures were brought to it, fulfilled that prophecy. Yet, Jesus built a greater temple in us. As we gather together as the living stones, we too fulfill that temple of God, the very dwelling place of God, here this morning. And even further, when we look to the future, we will dwell with God face to face. And even this is only a foretaste, a partial fulfillment of that greater temple that is yet to come. And so, as I come to this passage, I will admit that I take what is often called a typology approach. One that says, yes, there's aspects of this that are clearly for them. But if you look carefully at the language as well, things fall short. As we look at it here, we will do that. We can see that things don't fit very comfortably if we try to put it all back on just merely the destruction of the temple. But overall, what I think we can understand, and all of us can see, that as we look at this passage, Christ is saying time and time again, watch out. Take heed. Be on alert. These things prove that the end is not yet here. And you look forward to a greater coming of Christ where salvation comes in its fullness. And so none of these things, as I said last week, is meant to help us mark our eschatological calendars to say, oh, that now has happened, and now we can pinpoint this date or that date. But we are to be like that guard, awaiting, faithfully serving, and doing what God has commanded us. And so with that said, I had kind of hoped to take the entire rest of the section, partially because I kind of admit I wanted to get past this. This is so difficult and hard. But on the other hand, I, with all the study I did and with the variety of stuff, I really was only able to have enough time to study through verse 23. And so we're going to look at this passage in the two points of a time of abomination and a time of tribulation. And so as Jesus moves from those more general signs to a more particular sign, he talks about what is called this abomination of desolation in verse 14, where we start our text. And we read recently from Daniel 9 there, that abomination that makes desolate. Daniel said that on the wings of this abomination, it will make the temple desolate. And there will be a time of trial in that time. And so this passage, or Daniel 9, comes in the context of a greater vision, which talked about a little horn that would rise up and that would throw down truth and that would be blasphemous towards God. And so the Jews related that to Antiochus Epiphanes, who set up an idol in the temple and sacrificed pigs on it. And this caused the Israelites to desert their beloved temple. They just walked out. They got out of there. They would have nothing to do with it because of the sacrilege, the defilement that stood in the temple. It was no longer worth holding on to because it had been so defiled, so corrupted. And so Jesus tells his disciples that something on the same level will happen again. And however, because there's no revelation from God telling us exactly what this event was or who this person was, if it was meant to be a person, there's four major ways that people look at it and commentators have looked at it. One would say it was Caligula who erected a statue of himself in the temple in 40 AD, attempted to erect a statue of himself in 40 AD. But this idol, was actually never built. And so in some ways, this falls short of that. It also was done in 40 AD, and if they are to see this sign and flee to get out, that it was going to be a sign for them to flee, then it seems an awful long ways away from the fall of Jerusalem. And so the next suggestion comes where Titus himself stood in the temple following that fall of Jerusalem And there were standards brought in to that temple, these images. Again, an idolatrous thing that was in the temple, an abomination. And after that, it caused that desolation. Now, again, if one were to see this abomination as this, then it would be too late. The fall of Rome would have happened. The fall of Jerusalem in the temple would have happened already. And this was a command to show them when to flee, to get out. If you look over at Luke 21 with me, you can see that there is a parallel passage. Luke 21, verse 20 and following. It says there, "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then recognize her desolation is near. Then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains, and those who are in the midst of the city must leave, and those who are in the country must not enter the city." And these, again, seem to indicate, it's a parallel passage, it seems to give a commentary, and Luke seems to identify this desolation that would happen as the armies that are standing around. And this, in many ways, would make sense, since those who are standing on the housetop would see this. But again, would that really relate to what Daniel was talking about and prophesying there? And here too are the armies standing outside of Jerusalem, an abomination to God, as something sacrilegious? Well, these things, like I said, are difficult. And probably one of the best that fits what may be said here is talking about the zealots who in 67 and 68 took over the temple as their headquarters. They had committed great atrocities in there, and they had even shed Jewish blood. And Josephus said there was a priest who was set up who was such a clown he scarcely knew what the priesthood meant. And the way he describes it would be on par with what the Jews had seen as abomination of desolation. Now, of course, you're saying to me, all this is very interesting. But what does it mean for me? What am I supposed to take away from this? Well, if you take the position that this was filled in 70 AD, then it assures us that God protects his people. God will give indication when his people should flee Jerusalem. He protected them and drove them out. He gave them signs that they clearly understood, because they did flee Jerusalem. The Christians did flee Jerusalem in such a way that, again, Josephus says, or I think it actually was Eusebius, says that they went away like people swimming away from a sinking ship. People flee Jerusalem to the hills, to a place called Pella. And so he protected his church with this sign, with his very word. And if Christ's words were fulfilled in 70 AD, then all his promises continue to prove to be true. However, as we look at this, and as I would say, it doesn't quite fit completely within the way that the Word of God speaks about these things normally, that there's a type here, a precursor that would point us to a future as well. That there would be one who would stand as Antiochus Epiphanes did, that would blaspheme and claim to be Christ, to gather the glory for himself. And there was a man of lawlessness that is described in Thessalonians that I think fits this context about the abomination of desolation. That little horn that threw down truth and trampled the host and the stars of heaven. But all these things were a call to flee. To flee and head for the hills. That the abomination in Israel had been so great that they were called to get out because the temple was going to be destroyed. It's interesting that Jesus instructs them not to go back and get their coat. That they are not to go from the field back to their home to gather what they want. They're not to go into their house if they are standing on the rooftop, but they are to flee as quickly as you can. Take no time to gather up the things of this world, but get out. Do not look back like Lot and his wife, because you don't want to be caught up in the terrible persecution which follows. And so again, it seems that these things were very true following those days and leading up to those days of the destruction of Jerusalem. There was tribulation that was great, and there was distress that was terrible. But again, if you see this as more of a typology, there could be still a worse tribulation to come. And when one looks back at history, the tribulation that people have seen throughout history, is that really less than what happened in Jerusalem? It seems, especially when one looks at the Holocaust where 17 million people were killed, it'd be hard to say that that was not worse than what happened in Jerusalem. However, whatever you believe concerning this passage, one thing is clear that we can draw from it. I believe that we can see here, just as the disciples did, that there is a time in which to flee. Even to his disciples, when they entered the city and they were proclaiming the gospel, if they were rejected, they were to leave that city, shaking off the dust from their feet. And one does not have to commit their lives to standing in a place of persecution. But one may flee and make desolate places that are an abomination to God. This has to do with cities and churches. One may flee. But finally, I think the biggest thing that this whole passage draws us to do is to take heed. As verse 23 says, he has told us everything in advance. It is clear that the end of the world has not come, or the end of the age. We still live in a place where there is tribulation. There's persecution. There's famine. There's struggles. There's trials. There's suffering. And we are called to be faithful, to take heed, to watch out, to look forward to the return of Christ, to desire that return, and stand ready and faithfully. We are reminded by this passage, even for them, that this world is not our home. That we are awaiting a greater home. That the things of this world are meant to bring him glory and honor and can very easily be left behind. But we need to be ready to watch out, take heed, and be faithful all the way to the end of the age. And so I say to all, as Jesus says, be on alert. Amen.